afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for joining me this fine October afternoon for another edition of Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager. I'm Carolyn, your host, and it is October 25th, 2014. Today I'm going to express my personal thoughts and opinions, which is what I often do or usually do, but maybe a little bit more so today. And I invite you to do the same. If you wish to call in to the show, the number is 323-642-1206. 323-642-1206. My premise for today's show is comes directly from Adolf Hitler, that race is the most important requirement on which to build a society that works, and that race is expressed in the folk. The folk are a body of people of the same ethnicity who share a geographical territory and speak the same language. They also have a unique culture and customs. Food and food preparation also plays a role in a folk. The image that I use for this program today demonstrates a difference between two cultures and also, at the time, two ideologies. One is dignified and artistic. The other is less about beauty and more about the ideology, and I would say more in your face. But I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's more openly expressive of what the belief is. So today, I just thought I'd mention that image because some people might wonder why I've used it, so I thought I'd just explain it. Today, this seems and would often be dismissed as outdated to speak about folk and the differences among folk and this type of racial idea. In the modern age, we've become multicultural, multiracial, and these old separatist ideas don't have the meaning anymore that they did for the majority of people out there, and they don't fit the fast-paced age of advanced communication technologies we live in, or they may seem not to fit. They may seem old-fashioned. But we also see that our societies today don't work. How do we create? They don't work for us. They don't work for white people. Of course, they work for non-white people better than what they used to have, but they don't work for us. And that's something I don't have to explain to my audience, so I'll just just wanted to set that as a basis. And the question then is, how do we create working societies that without constant war, based on, for example, as so many think, nationalities, nations that are continually finding reasons to disagree with one another and have wars. But the thing is, you know, this is the argument that is used so often by these people out there that, oh, if you have too strong a national feeling, you'll have war all the time, like we used to have. But the thing is, we still have war, and we still have war all the time. And at the moment, there's a threat of another global war. Heaven forbid, and I mean that with all sincerity. Usually when I hear things like this, I think, that's just exaggerated talk. But this time, I'm starting to wonder if things could get to a point where nobody can back down. So, and this is, of course, between Russia and NATO? But we'll get to that in a little bit. I do want to point out why ethnicity is important, not just race. And fortunately, and then we'll get to ideology, but fortunately, I noticed a comment this morning at the Daily Stormer website that expressed it very well, I thought. And it was to an article, it was a comment to an article titled On the Use of the Word Nazi by Ben Garland. And this, I'm going to read this comment short. It was made by the person who calls himself Wolf911. And he wrote, this article is interesting as it reveals our problem with the tag we label ourselves with today. The word nationalist is, for me, a problem in itself. I do not wish to fight for a nation, but for my tribe, who are Saxons, and for my ethnic group, who are Germanics, and for my race, white. Herein, Himmler was on a better path, a Europa of nations as people, just like the American Indians speak about the Lakota Nation or the Apache Nation. But today, nation is a word charged with nonsense and corruption. In France and Spain, he's giving some examples here. In France and Spain, it is several oppressed tribes, Bretons, Basque, Catalans, Corsicans, living under an empire border, that is, living within an empire that they don't relate to as their own. And he says, in Belgium, it is much worse even, that we have two ethnic groups, Germanics and Celts, trying to support each other. He calls it Celts. It's German and French, but, you know, it's confusing about what the French are, and they are partly Celt. So, in the northern part, I guess, more. So, that probably fits. And the other example he uses is Holland, saying that in Holland, the people think of themselves as, quote, orange, unquote, and are faithful to the crown instead of being loyal to their Germanic race. Well, the House of Orange is indeed the source of the monarchy for the Netherlands and comes from William of Orange, who began in 1533 and until the country was independent in 1648. And so The Netherlands does have a kind of same kind of monarchy like the British have. It's kind of a symbolic, but it's the House of Orange. And obviously, what he's saying is that they identify themselves with this rather than with race or folk, and so do the British. At least that's what they want the British to do. And so he says, and he adds that the Dutch are indistinguishable from the Western Germans. And so on it goes, he says. Now, I agree. You know, I just want to add in here that I really agree that being Germanic seems to mean absolutely nothing to most Dutch. They're highly urbanized, and they have many Jews, and their Jews are very assimilated. They consider their Jews as just more Dutch people. And so that's part, that kind of goes along with it when you think, you have to remember that goes along with being less nationalistic or less racialistic with some of these peoples. And not the original Britain or those who still identify as British, but as indigenous British, but but Britain is the same, you know, identifying itself with the monarchy and with some kind of, with the ruling class and with their history, but not with their race. That's what they want the British to do. You know, so he continues. This is still Wolf 9/11. He continues. The word nationalist and Nazi, no. The word nationalist as Nazi appeals to bad memory. We're talking about that word Nazi, see, as long as real history cannot be revealed to the public. I would label myself more a folk socialist or an ethno-socialist, but admit I haven't found a good-sounding international counterpart of Nazi. Oh, this is me now, I do believe. This is the importance of ethnicity. Without upholding your ethnicity as what especially defines you, your race is also forgotten. See, pointing to the Dutch people, the Netherlanders, and the modern British, that they forget about caring about ethnicity, and when you forget about ethnicity, you also forget about race. The problem with white nationalism, I'm saying, is that it supposes it can do away with ethnicity and tribe, as he brought up the tribes, and function only from race, meaning sort of like white, black, and yellow, you know, and you're one or the other, and you fit into the white, and that's what we want to. Even though white nationalists always insist, and I'm not trying to do away with white nationalism or criticize it to death. I'm just pointing out some of the things that I think are lacking in it. And they always say, well, of course, we don't want to disturb anybody's nationality or ethnicity or whatever. We want to complement. We just want everybody to work together, everyone in the white race to work together to make ourselves stronger. Because without that, we're not strong enough. But the facts are that maybe I shouldn't say the facts. I have great doubts that this approach works very well, and it confuses people. And some people are very much moved toward the idea of I'm a member of the white race and want to forget about the ethnicity and their tribe and so on. And others focus on the former, and that creates differences and plenty of disagreement to go around. So more of this should be made clear as we move along. Naturally, the German, or broadening it to Germanic, is an ethnicity. And is the Slavonic another one? I would say so. I decided to identify here all the different ethnicities of Europe. And I'm starting with the Germanic, which is easiest for me. Germans, Austrians, English, Netherlandish, or Dutch, Norwegian, Swedish, excuse me, Denmark, Danish, Swiss, and there's a few more. I think there's a couple more, but I ran out of them at that point. And then there's Celts, and they're a little difficult for me, but checking into it, they are the, for one thing, they're the original Britons, spelled with an O, Britons. And today, supposedly, they only exist in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Cornwall, which is the western peninsula of England, the Isle of Man, and Brittany in northwest France. So, and then there's the Slavs, and the Slavonic ethnicity includes the Russians, Poles, Czechs, Slovaks, Slovenes, Ukrainians, and all those in the Balkans, or a lot of them in the Balkans, all those countries down in the Balkans that are Slav. I think that's pretty much it. And then we have Italy, Spain, France, and I don't know what to call them. I'm calling them the Latin or Romance ethnicities, because I really don't know exactly. There's a certain mixture, or someone can clue me in on that, or at least we know that they're not a part of these other groups, especially. And then lastly, the Finno-Ugric, which is what it's called officially in the dictionaries and so on. And we have the Finns, the Estonians, the Latvians, possibly the Lithuanians. I'm putting them there, and the Hungarians. And there's just disagreement about all of that. Who is what there, but anyway, just for convenience sake, these are the different, what I would call ethnicities of Europe. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that are pretty distinct, and that's interesting, you know. They can all get along. We all get along. I think they all get along under the banner of white, but still, they all have their own distinctive traits and customs and histories too, which they are proud of or not, and defend and so on. So ethnicity is a people group that share a geographical territory and speak the same language, or a very similar language, or from the same language group. And well, no, that's the all right. I'll put it under that heading. And they also have a unique culture and customs, not as different from one another as they are all different from, say, the black races or something like that, or the yellow races, but still different and important distinctions. And also in, did I mention cuisine and food preparation? And also even a way of ordering or not their households, things like that. So now I'm going to move on to the current conflict between the West and East Caucasians, which is today is Ukraine is in the center of our current conflicts. And I get mails from pro-Russian people, some of which used to mail me about third and fourth position, as a political stand regarding Hitler and National Socialism, wanting to convince me to see it their way or join their side. And they're about the same people who are pro-Russian today, on this Ukraine issue only. And then another comment I'm going to read came yesterday to my website, CarolynJaeger.net, that I did not post because it was from someone who named himself as Q, just the letter Q, and an email address that is clearly fake, with no such address. When I get that, I don't really like to post something from people who are unwilling to even give a working email address. If they're so unwilling to be known at all, what their views are, then I don't think their views mean much to them. And I don't know if they're just a troll or just somebody who's not at all what he says he is. And so I didn't post it because I don't think there's anything dangerous in what this person wrote. So since there's nothing for him to get in trouble with, it's just that he doesn't want, even me to know, even have an inkling as to who he might be. And I don't take that as somebody who's serious. But this person could be real, and I'm going to read the comment. He writes, "Dunno, Carolyn, do you really want to spend the message of, excuse me, do you really want to spread the message of Kasparov.net? Well, this was written to the post I made for the woman who is Ludmilla. Her first name is Ludmilla, who was arrested last Friday. Yes, in the southern part of Russia, where she is located, I think in the Rostov province, which is right next to Ukraine there, and she is one of the workers for the, or head, she heads the organization down there of the mothers of, I don't have that in front of me, but the mothers of soldiers in Russia. And they've been doing a lot of work. They've been around for a long time. They're always called a highly respected organization. The headquarters is up, north, but she's the head of the agency or whatever down where she is. And she's been the most active, I suppose, in looking into where these soldiers, these Russian soldiers, a slew of Russian soldiers had died and been their bodies sent to their families and so on. And it was all being covered up, and she was looking into where they died. And these people talk, even these rebels talk, and even these people fighting in Ukraine who say that they're the Russian fighting for Russia talk about things. And they get a lot of information, and they found out a lot that revealing that these Russian soldiers did die fighting in Ukraine at the time in September, August and September and so on, when when Putin, the official story was that there were no Russian soldiers fighting. It was just, then they said, well, some of them went there voluntarily. But then that was disputed also, in that they couldn't have been gone voluntarily. So because they were attached to units and so on. So they weren't on vacation or any of those stories. So I mean, it's just all these lies coming from the Russian government and Putin himself to deny that they had sent their own soldiers over into Ukraine, because at the time when the so-called rebels were losing, they were losing, about ready to lose everything, and so then Putin decided to do that. But he denies it. So this woman had, as all of a sudden they came in, the police or whatever, security officials, and accused her of fraud based on who knows what. Nobody, that hasn't been published yet. But they put her in jail, and it was on a Friday, she was not able to see a lawyer until Monday. That was the rule there. So she had to sit there Friday evening, you know, Saturday, Sunday, until on Monday she could contact a lawyer, and or there her agency could contact, her group could send one. But I haven't heard another thing about it. I didn't check today, but there hasn't been any news on it. And that was clearly to shut her up, because she was the one who was behind revealing a lot of that. So this was the post that I posted, and all of a sudden, after it was up for about a day, there was a whole lot of reads on it, several hundred, and so I realized that probably these people in Russia probably discovered it, and we're looking to see who here. You know, in the USA was what kind of a national socialist was interested in this story. And probably the agency itself wondering that they were being supported by national socialists, which they wouldn't really care for. But in any case, that's where this comment was written by this person who called himself Q. He wrote it on that, to that post. It's the only one that's there. And he says, again, I'm going to start from the beginning. Dunno, Carolyn, do you really want to spread the message of Kasparov.net? Well, that's where I found that story was linked to that website in Russian. And I put it on Google Translate. And, you know, Google Translate does a good job of translating Russian. It must be a fairly simple language or something, because it did a very, very good job. I, of course, made some, editing to it, but it was not difficult. And that's what I posted there. And so this Q says, look, we are at war, not yet on the historical scale, but undeniably so, and on a massive scale. Methinks you better choose sides. You cannot just criticize all sides without end. If you prefer the Jewess of A, Jewess of A, in this conflict, say so. But if not, there is no one but the Russians to side with. There is not a third party running. Well, there's no third party running, but there's a third side besides the Jewess of A and the Russian side. And I've written it before, that and I've said it at the beginning of this show, that there's Hitler's Third Reich, and that's the side I'm on. And someone said it very well, too. Another comment I'm going to quote from today at Daily Stormer, Chris White wrote about at some article there, and wrote this. I think it was on the one by Sven Longshanks, supporting the expansion of this neo-Soviet entity. This is Chris White, which is what modern Russia, he wrote this, he says, which is what modern Russia is. Putin himself claims to regret the fall of the Soviet Union and is already busily engaged outlawing National Socialism. Well, he's already done it, but maybe he'll do more. Into parts of nationalist Ukraine is something different altogether that we as followers of the ideological dispensation of Adolf Hitler must roundly and coherently reject. So he says that supporting this expansion of a neo-Soviet entity into Ukraine today is something that if you're a follower of the ideological dispensation of Adolf Hitler, you cannot do, and you must reject. But an awful lot of them are doing it. I agree with Chris White. I've said the same. So I was saying that, a lot of people say that they're absolutely followers of Adolf Hitler. I'm a National Socialist, you know, and I'm a this and that, and yet they are supporting Vladimir Putin, who is who not only has outlawed and or passed laws with prison sentences and big fines against promoting National Socialism in Russia or the objects of Hitler or Adolf Hitler himself, which I can understand. They were at war, a big time war, not all that long ago, and they have not gotten over that. So I can understand that, but what I do find very bad is that he's also outlawed, or he's also made it law that the results of the Nuremberg Tribunal and the findings, what they've come up with, are absolute law, cannot be questioned in Russia today. That's historical truth that cannot be questioned. The Nuremberg Tribunal findings, and that's what I cannot accept at all. We'll never accept that from them. I don't care that they were at war with the National Socialists. So, that's where I stand there with Chris. And some people understand that and see that, and others, I don't think they don't understand it, but they don't want to be held to it, and because they are attracted to Putin and the Russian. I don't know, the Russians or the Russian position. If some people want to call in about it, they can explain that. And also, I have my mailbox open, or I can check my mail at carolyn@carolynyeager.net. So if you want to write something, rather than call in, I will go and take a look at that after a while, at least. By 1.5 hours time. All right, so he goes on now. This Q fellow, he says, please consider, asking me to consider this, that there's nobody but the Russians to side with. And then he says he's a long time listener, one time supporter, Russian Hungarian mutt. Thanks. Well, he sounds nice enough. And he might be. In fact, I kind of think he is a listener and a one-time supporter and a Russian-Hungarian person. He's definitely probably Russian, and that fits. But, you know, I just don't know why he doesn't want me to know or have any clue whatsoever as to who he is. Does he think I'm going to do something to him? Okay, that's fine. People think if they don't have to... Any information that they don't have to give out, they're not going to. So if they don't have to give a real email address, which you don't at my site, because then it brings up some other kind of rules that I wanted to dispense with people, you know, becoming members and so on, and I didn't want to do that. So I do without that. But most people do give a real email address, and I always do when I write comments, and I never write a comment that doesn't have my name on it. I am not at all in the habit of writing anonymous comments because I don't want to waste my time. I'm not just trying to. I'm only trying to put forward my views and let people know they're my views. And that's it. So that's the deal, Mr. Q. And if you don't want to give a real email address, then don't expect to have your comment posted. And it's not because I'm going to hand them over to the government. Now, we have to understand that maybe just being Russian explains a lot of people's... I think it explains... A lot of the people who are supporting Russia on the Russian side in this are Russian or also Slavic. There are some that aren't, I'm sure. Quite a few that wouldn't be. But for the most part, they are. Just as many... who identify strongly as German, don't like Putin and don't trust him at all, and for much of the reasons that Chris gave above and that I elaborated on, his attitude and his passing those laws against any speaking about anything to do with NS and also particularly I hate repeating myself again. The idea that the Nuremberg Tribunal is real history, and that's what has to be followed, and nobody can dispute it. So I mentioned the Sven Longshanks, and I'm going to go to another story from Daily Stormer, and it went up yesterday. And I thought it fit here very well. And he's actually just makes a few comments, and then he's posted an article, an interview from the BBC, which is and that's all. There's not that much from Sven, but he does say that I thought was interesting. He says he's talking about the title of it is Donetsk. A freedom fighter speaks about plans for Novo Russia, new Russia, Novo Russia. I find it, I'm getting tired of hearing about that. Well, I shouldn't put it that way. I should say, what is New Russia? There's no such thing. Well, I thought about it more today, and I thought, well, what they're trying to do is to create another Russia outside of Russia, but where Russia used to be, and they think they're justified in that for some reason. Because I was thinking, why don't they just end up calling it Russia? But they want to call it New Russia. Well, I thought about places in the United States like New York and New Amsterdam and a lot of New This and New That, which were supposedly from New Jersey. Maybe it's from the Jersey Shore of England or whatever. Is there such a place? There's something called Jersey. It's about establishing settlements of these people. Like New York was once began as New Amsterdam. So, it was a settlement of Netherlandish people from Amsterdam, so they called it New Amsterdam. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to create. And this is not the only one. This is not the only location that Novo Russia will be. They want to create Russian settlements and actually have that are independent and self-governing, and not just self-governing, but totally independent of the nation that the area is in, and it used to belong to them, but now it's going to belong. It's going to be something new that these rebels are creating, which I don't find, I find it sneaky. I don't think it fits in today's world that they're going to create a Novo Russia, and that it makes any sense when it's right next door to Russia and what Russia used to control as the Soviet Union. So, that's not on the up and up, really. But anyway, so much for that. Sven writes, a ceasefire in effect in the east of the Ukraine is in effect. No. It just says a ceasefire in effect in the east of the Ukraine, but the noble Russian freedom fighters do not think the calm will last very long. The pro-EU Maidan revolutionaries are going to the polls this week, and the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics are holding theirs next week. And then this is the important sentence. The nationalists in the east see themselves as fighting to liberate all Russian lands, to create a new state called Nova Russia. They are heavily influenced by Alexander Dugin and use the traditions of Orthodox Christianity to unite the people. Influenced by Alexander Dugin. Wow. Alexander Dugin is, of course, a multiracialist, and he's all for the multicultural, multi-ethnic Federation of Russia as being the norm and what we should all become. He's not for white people. He kind of hates white people because he's always associating white people with the horrible United States Anglo-Atlantic, as he calls it, political dominance. That he hates so much, and that totally welcomes Jews. But you know, he doesn't talk about Jews. He doesn't, and neither do these Nova Russia people, and neither does Putin. When they attack the Ukraine, it's based on fascism. Nazism, they call it, and also that they're aligned with the European Union, they want to be, and the United States. So that's what's the devilish to them. They never mention Jews. So all these people who are backing them, at the Daily Storm and so on, and people who write to me, who claim that the Ukraine, that the government in Kiev is all Jews, it's all infested with Jews, and it's all just to get the Ukraine into the EU and away from Russia. Well, that's the kind of thing that goes on in world politics all the time. But the fact is that Jews are infested everywhere. Jews are everywhere. They're in Russia too. They're in Putin's government too. I mean, there's no place where they're not. So to say that Kiev is infested with Jews, I doubt they're infested any more than Kiev ever was, or when Russia, was dominating it and didn't see a problem there, or any of these other countries are infested, no different. So this is a false charge and what you'd call it could be called a red herring. It can also be called a straw man. It's something to use that doesn't really hold water because it's not peculiar to Kiev. But a little more about Dugin here coming up. And then Sven writes, one of their field commanders, Alexander Matyushin, even talks of making it all the way to the Danube and restoring the historic injustice that befell the Russian people in the last century. So now they're talking with Putin's blessing about restoring the historic injustice that the Russian people have suffered over who knows how long, and get back all kinds of territory that maybe Imperial Russia once at one time controlled. We've been talking about this in relation to the Poles also and their kind of strange history and what they think they used to own this and that, and they should have it back. And also to people everywhere. Everybody would like to restore their lands. The ones who have the most right to restore lands that were taken not all that long ago are the Germans. But I'm not going to go into that right now unless somebody else brings it up. So This shows that these people are just beginning, and they'll just keep going for as long as they can, get more and more and more. And Sven finishes, the BBC recently gave a comprehensive report on the ideology of the supposed rebels, including an interview with Matyushin. So this is Matyushin now from the BBC. We had the idea of a Christian Orthodox revolution back then, he explained. Our ambition was to create an Orthodox Al-Qaeda. Must have been talking about the Afghanistan war, something. Despite their once similar vision, the two men have followed very different paths. Well, this is the interviewer speaking about Matyushin and another guy, Korchinsky, who both have this dream of creating the new Russia. And so this Matyushin proudly shows off his battalion insignia, a skull and crossbones with the motto, quote, the more foes, the greater the honor. Well, people are saying, isn't that great? They're just like the NS. Oh, they're just like, well, they stole it. It's not their idea. They stole it from Hitler's SS, from Heinrich Himmler's, the death's head. So they're using a skull and crossbones, and they're even using a similar type of motto, which supposedly brings more honor to them, that the more foes, the greater the honor. When have the Russians ever talked about honor? Not hardly. But now these ones are, because they're stealing. I knew from the beginning that they were stealing from Germany, from the National Socialists, and from the SS, from everything that they did in the war. And Putin is doing all kinds of things that Hitler did. And he's at the same time, portraying Hitler as an evil person, but he is following Hitler's example in the way he's trying to gain against these, what is this Anglo-American alliance that wants to control everything. It's true, but, I get angry when I see stuff like this, because, again, they're not honest, and what I can't stand is dishonesty. And Hitler said in our last table talk, Hitler made the comment. He was talking about some, it's either the last one or the one before. He was talking about some, whoever they were, some group he didn't think much of. I think it was some group in Germany, German political group. But he said, and what's even worse, he said, he's saying some bad things about us. What's even worse, they're not even honest. And he named some things that they weren't honest about. Well, to not care whether people are honest it shows there's something wrong. There's something wrong with the people who don't care about other people's honesty, I think. And the Russians are not honest. They've never been honest, and they're not honest now in what they're doing. Because he goes on, this Matyushin goes on and says, freedom is valued only when it is paid for by blood. Well, there's another, he's got a steely note in his voice. There's another thing taken from the SS. And then he says, we have to sacrifice the lives of countless heroes before we can fully realize our destiny. Again, sounds just like Himmler and the SS talking, and they've certainly read all that. They've read parts of it anyway, and they copy it, because that's basically a trait of, of Slavic people, is to copy what Germanic people do and say. So this musician was asked, does it make him happy to see a new Russia born out of war, death, and destruction? He has said that he was Ukrainian, and he has Ukrainian roots. This is a different person, and he'd been friends with Ukrainian nationalists, but now he's not friends with them, because he thinks that Ukraine belongs in the Russian world. And he says about the war, death, and destruction, I feel sorry for everybody, even for Ukrainian soldiers, he replies, but there is no other way. I hope we will march on Kiev, and each region of Ukraine will have its own referendum to decide if they want to be part of Russia, part of Ukraine, or to create an independent state. Well, I say that is just stupid. You know, that just shows these people don't have, aren't smart enough to have a clear idea of what they're about and what the effect is going to be. Because they have this dream, they want to say that they just want to free everybody. Everybody's going to have their own little place and their own referendum. And whatever their referendum, every region, you know, whatever their referendum decides, if they want to be part of Russia or part of Ukraine, well, they will. And so you'll have people, you'll have, I guess, this country of Ukraine, a checkerboard of this part here is Russian, this part here is under this no-rule Russia, and this part here is Ukraine. You can't work anything out that way. Or he says they can even create an independent state so some little region can be independent. You know, that is not the way to do things, and certainly Adolf Hitler knew that and had no ideas of doing anything like that ever. But these dumb Russians, I shouldn't say dumb, but these Russians think, they're not thinking. You know, they don't really think it through, and they're not philosophers, they're not political analysts, they're just dreamers and talkers who are part of this movement. And then he says, if Western Ukrainians do want to be part of Ukraine, I would let them. The will of the people is for me above all else. So, you know, so whatever the people decide in any region is what's going to be. And yet, I'm going to repeat one more time, the people have no will. And people are all mixed. Everywhere you go, some people think this way, some people think that way. So somebody has to say it's going to be this way. And that's it. And in a sense of not of trying to do what's best for the people. Let's see. The same musician says, although many of the rebel fighters in the East quietly admit to being tired of war, their mantra is, quote, we are fighting now so that there will be no more wars in the future. Can you imagine that? How incredible. How incredibly, I have to say it, dumb statement that is. Just like Woodrow Wilson. You know, have they ever read about that? World War I, do they know anything about it? They're going to fight a war now so that there won't be any more wars in the future. Sure. The rebels say they have 18,000 volunteer fighters, mostly from Russia, and that more are keen on joining, like this poor Zhenya, who I've read about. It's an 18-year-old boy who was reading all about the war and everything and watching it on television, and they promote it in the most unrealistic ways in Russia. And he ran away from home. He left a note for his mother on the refrigerator and said he'd be back in 2 months. He tried to call her, and he ran off down south to go and join that war. And when it was sent into Ukraine, he got a little bit of training, and he sent into Ukraine. These rebels did that to him, and the Russians too. And he wasn't there very long, and he was killed in that big massacre that took place. I can't think of now where it was, but his comrade, his buddies there, or his fellow, you know, people in his unit, one of them talked about it and said that he was really too inexperienced, and when they were retreating under fire, he was covering their rear. Why this 18-year-old was chosen to cover their rear, but he got a bullet. He took a bullet, and that was the end of him. Well, then on top of that, his mother is very upset. Plus her grief, she's angry as all get out, and she had to go through all kinds of hell to get his body back because, as she tells it, nobody was going to send it back, and nobody was going to even admit that he was there and that he died, and that she had to she got donations from her neighbors and the people in her town to travel down there and pick up his body and pay to have it herself to have it delivered back to their home, so that he could be buried, and she could have him buried there and have a proper burial and so on. And the whole story, I'm going to put a link to it. I read it yesterday. It's in, it's called Russia, Son Killed, Ukraine Mother Grieves. But this is the glory that these people are talking about. Now, you know, I understand that the Germans, at the end of the, in 1945 in Berlin, they had all these young, they had these boys and these Hitler youth and old men and boys and so on fighting. But they were fighting for the last vestiges of their country. But these fighters are not fighting for anything like that. They've got all of Russia there. They're only trying to get some more because of what took place in that coup that drove the pro-Russian president out and all of a whole bunch of his advisors too. And I guess they took a whole heck of a bunch of billions of dollars with them, and they're all living in luxury now in around Moscow somewhere. But you know, this is portrayed. There's no reason for what's going on, really. Russia doesn't need that. They're just angry about what's taking place with Ukraine. I can understand that, but the way that it's being gone about, I cannot agree with. Now, let me cover this here a little bit more of things I thought were important. Here's where they talk about Dugin. So the interviewer is writing this news story, and he says one of those involved in the online recruitment process, again which connects to this boy that I was telling you about, whose name is actually was Yevgeny Pushkayo. Well, they says one of them is the Eurasian Movement, a far-right political group. Far-right? Eurasian Movement is far-right? I don't think so. It's supposed to be a mix of far-right and far-left or something. How you do that, I don't know. But with an international reach, founded by ultra-nationalist philosopher Alexander Dugin. So, you know, I say what? Because how do you call Alexander Dugin an ultra-nationalist? He's absolutely not. What he calls a nation, I guess, is a federation. He's for federations of multi-racial and multi-ethnic peoples. He's not an ultra-nationalist. But this is not Sven writing this, but Sven did post it there. But it's the BBC writing it. And then it says, close to the Ukrainian border is the Russian city of Rostov. One of Dugin's Eurasian activists, Mikhail Uchitel, is working with Russian volunteer fighters who have been signed up online in preparation for their journey into Ukraine. Now, that's what this boy did, this Yevgeny. That's what he did. He's online, and he's watching all this propaganda on television. He's getting all worked up, you know, and he's always was interested in the military, it was said. So he's signing up online, and he runs away from home and goes down there. And they take him and send him into battle. Never been in a battle before in his life, you know. They admitted he was inexperienced. Well, I don't have anything more. This Mr. Uchitel, who's one of Dugin's activists, is quoted as saying, the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics are political entities about to conduct elections. Soon we will talk not about a rebel force, but a proper army, the Army of Novo Russia. Well, they assume that after they have their elections, they're going to announce, I guess, that they're a full nation state or something called Novo Russia. And then they'll continue to fight as that. They'll have all their own prime minister and president and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is not going away. It's not going to be solved either. It's not getting solved. It's getting worse. And then this Matsyushin, who we started out with, he's a field commander down there, and he says that there's only going to be local clashes during the winter, but the rebel offensive will resume in the spring, so we might have a little bit of a respite during the, from now on. They might not make their big moves, but you don't know. But he is quoted then as saying, "You cannot subjugate people who have experienced real freedom. Eventually, I am sure, victory will be ours." What's he talking about? That these Russian people have experienced real freedom. Where? Where? People were quite free in Ukraine, quite free to be crooks, to take bribes, to be corrupt. But there's a lot of freedom. You know, nobody was being unfree, except that the Russians wanted to dominate what went on there. But they didn't care about the quality of the people or the lives or how much corruption was in Ukraine. They didn't care. Putin, the Russian government didn't care. And the people that they put in there didn't care. Now these people, Ukrainians, are really trying to, improve themselves. But they're having, they're being, Putin's Russia doesn't want it to happen. And doesn't want to let them go. So to say that Russian rebels are in the east are trying to bring trying to help people who are subjugated is stupid, just plain stupid. You know, they're just, somebody gives them this propaganda, these propaganda points. And so they make them, but they don't add up. They don't make sense. You know, there is something that I wanted right here. I think I should talk about what I was reading about the Ukrainians, and they have a history of being brave and courageous, and of being persecuted horribly by their neighbors. First by the Poles, or maybe not first by the Poles, but by the Poles, by the Polish, whenever the Poles got any kind of power or authority or more land, they right away persecuted the Ukrainians something fierce. And the Ukrainians fought back with a whole lot of bravery. And the Russians also persecuted the Ukrainians, as is well known, very badly. If the author said that in some cases the Ukrainians were treated so badly, and like really wanting to have them wiped out, but they managed to survive some of the most terrible stuff, you know? Like we know what the Holodomor was. They managed to survive things like this when they really were trying to be wiped out. And they are tough. And the fact that they still survive today and that they're there in that country. And while they've had a slow start because they've been under the, you might say, what, the, I just keep coming up with the word dominance, but of Russia from the time from 1991 on, and they were talked into giving up their nuclear weapons, and but they've, the Russians have never helped them. The Russian government and Putin's regime has never helped Ukraine to become better or to get rid of their corruption. They've added to it or to move forward. And finally, they've got some people there who, for whatever reason, managed to build up a group, and some groups of groups, a whole bunch of the groups. And the fact that there's Jews mixed in there, I don't see that as something that would turn me off, because you're not going to keep those Jews out. And there's tons of Jews in Ukraine, so you know, it seems as though these people have. I knew a Ukrainian woman too from Canada, and I thought a lot of her, and I met her brother too. I think her whole family was pretty nice. They came over. They immigrated though when she was a little girl, and she said that in Canada they were like in Alberta, A lot of Ukrainians went there, and the people hated them. Everywhere Ukrainians go, people hate them. And they were picked on, told they were no good, stupid Ukrainians, all through her schooling. But she managed to turn out real good, you know, and her brother did too. And that's the only one I met, but she had a number of other brothers and sisters and a fairly close family. And I don't know, she just seemed like any other kind of person. To me, she liked me, I know that. Maybe she just liked Germans, but I don't know if she paid any attention to that or not. But I wasn't playing that up at the time. So, but that's one that I know. But I think these people are not the worthless people that they're made out to be. They can be a whole lot better, and I think they should be given a chance. So this brings us to ideology. Also brings me to the midpoint of this show, and I'm going to be talking about the Saker Vineyard of the Saker blog. So I'm going to play some music here, and I'm going to go check my email, and I think I will go back to Frank Reneke. Frank Reneke in Das Model mit der Fahne, the girl with the flag. That's a very nice song. It's in German, and it's, let's see, it's 3 minutes and 11 seconds. So see you back here in a little over 3 minutes.
Im Mai 45 in Hamburg etwa. Ich sing euch ein Lied von dem, was geschah. Es ist die Geschichte und viele sind gleich. Von dem Mädchen mit der Fahne vom Deutschen Reich. Das Mädel war 15, als der Feind im Reich stand. Doch ihr Herz gab nicht auf ihren Kampf für das Land. Und so nahm sie zur Hand in der bittersten Not die Fahne des Reiches, schwarz war heiß und rot.
Auf einem Motorrad ein Engländer kam und sah nun das Mädel mit der Fahne im Arm. Doch es durfte nicht sein, dass in seinem Bereich man die Fahnen oft zeigte vom Deutschen Reich. Er lacht über sie, noch mahnend er schreit: Komm, gib mir die Fahne, sei brav und gescheit. Komm, gib mir die Fahne, hör auf mein Gebot. Ihr zeigt niemand die Farben schwarz, weiß und rot.
Von der Fahne zu lassen, das singst du mich nicht. Er fährt wie mein Blut, so trotzig sie spricht. Noch trag ich ein Messer und das Leben ist gleich. Wenn ich sterbe, so fall ich für die Fahne vom Reich.
Er stieg auf sein Pferd mit bleichem Gesicht und fuhr seinen Weg, als noch leise er spricht. Warum geht nur ein Kind noch jetzt in den Tod? Warum nur dieses Opfer für schwarz, weiß und rot?
Und noch an den Haben sank die Fahne dahin. Das gewaffnete Mädel kam ihm nicht aus dem Sinn. Ihr Leib war zerschossen, die Lippen ganz bleich. Sie saß noch am Abend für die Fahne vom Reich.
Das Opfer des Mädchens vergesst ihr es nie. Verliert nie den Stolz und kämpft wie sie. Bis es endlich so weit, dass auch ihr irgendwann die Zeichen des Reiches man zeigen kann. Die Zeichen des Reiches man zeigen kann.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, It is October 25th, 2014, and the topic today is race, ethnicity, and ideology. And I did check my email, and well, you know, I have an email, but it's from someone who I think is a weird person, and I'm going to read it, though, since I said I would read the emails, and people could give their opinions here so on today's show. So I'm going to read it. I got this once before, and I think it was exactly the same thing. I didn't reply to it, but it's from Adam, Dr. Adam. And he says, Russia, Carolyn, has been entirely Yiddish since about 1950 or so. There are no Russians, pure white people, living there. They were all genocided off, of course, by the Yiddish, that is Bolshevik majority, murderers. And Putin is one of the murderers and the offspring of the brood, as well, of course, his Bolshevik ancestors genocided all of the white people. Every historian knows this well. You knew this, right? No, I didn't know it, Adam, and I still don't know it, and I think you don't know what you're talking about, but there it is. And I don't see anything else coming in here. And just while I'm here, I'll refresh it one more time. Okay. So I'm going to talk about the Saker blog, or called The Vineyard of the Saker. And I imagine that some people who are listening or will listen to this show are readers of this blog. And as a matter of fact, there's lots of things on Daily Stormer today. Someone, I only read two comments on two threads there, but someone said on one of them that had sent in a bunch of links to the Saker blog, saying, oh, you should read this and this and this, and there was about at least three of them there. And I know that in reading the Saker blog, that's what I'm calling it, in the last couple of days, there he was encouraging, asking people to post links for his blog all over the place, you know, to get more people coming there and more readers, although he says he has 20 to 30,000 readers per day on his blog, Vineyard of the Saker. Now, it's possible because it's one of those places that people, a whole lot of people, white, some white people, but a whole lot of non-white people, would be thinking is giving them the inside dope, you know, or the real good information. There's a lot of these people, and they could be, you know, they could go there every day to see if there's something new they want to look at. So I'm not denying that. If he said he is getting 200,000 or 300,000, I would question it, but I'm not going to question 20,000 or 30,000. He's now this is called the Vineyard of the Saker. blogspot.com, and he's got a blog. He's got a Blogspot website, which are free, totally free. And he's had that since 2007. And yet now he asked for a lot of money and keeps saying he needs a lot of money. And I didn't have time to go back, and maybe I decided not to go and look at something that he posted. I've known about him for maybe 6 months or so. I don't know. I'm not at all good about remembering back. But he, I first heard about that. Oh, I think it might, yeah, well, anyway, I went and so I thought, well, I read it for a little while. I was reading some things on it for a few days, and I got bored, and I realized this wasn't anything I was really interested in, and I didn't really trust him or like him that much, so I didn't go back. But I've been aware of it, and once in a while somebody might mention it or something, some link. I may have looked at it again, but I really haven't. But I something was posted and I went again, and I found his blog on community brainstorming. I'm swimming against a tsunami that was posted on October 21st, a few days ago, which is a long request for people to send in donations. And so now he's totally pro-Russian, has been from the start. Like I say, he started in 2007. I went back to his very first post to see what he said, and I read some of the early ones. And I, you know, to me, he's probably Russian, and that's why he feels the way he does. And he's obviously an American. He's a Russian-American, or he may have something else in him, too. He may have some Asian or some Arab. He's also basically a communist, except he says he's not left-wing, but, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know what he thinks. He has no problem with the Soviet Union, really. He'll criticize it, but at the same time, he promotes it too, very much like Putin. He seems to be a clone of Vladimir Putin, and he calls Putin Vladimir Vladimirovich, you know, in a very fond way, like Russian family people would do or something. But with not using a pet name, but with respect. And it's just obviously, he speaks ordinary, normal English, writes ordinary, normal American English. But he's very, very familiar and very close to everything Russian and Putin and the whole thing. And so, I mean, I thought at a time that he's probably on their payroll. Of course, and then he says, he writes a special post saying, for those who think I'm on Putin's payroll or Russia's payroll or whatever, oh, well, let me inform you, you know, and he said, that's always being said for anybody who's, well, naturally, he would say that, so you can't tell. There's no, I don't know that he is, or if he is, I don't know if they bother to pay people like him, or he does it all for nothing. He says, he has on there the thing that I thought was quite humorous. From the start, he's got that orange and black striped Russian decoration ribbon. And he says on there, Russia is freedom. Or I think he has another word there than just Russia is freedom. But it's like the Orwell's 1984, when you say, you know, slavery is freedom. And, you know, I don't know, something is love and so on. Well, that's what strikes me when you say Russia is freedom. Look, I know Russia is not, you know, people aren't enslaved in Russia. I'm not so backward, but I wouldn't say Russia is freedom, that's for sure. But he thinks it's freedom compared to the West. And what he really hates, does he ever hate the West and the Americans? And, well, you know, I mean, I don't hate the West, see, but because I'm Western, but I hate the people who are running it, who are in control of it. That's what I hate. I think there's a difference. So I want to point out, I said on here where this guy is coming from and what he's really all about. And as I said a few months ago, at least, I was reading it a little bit, and I saw. There was a blog post that was talking about donations, and he was thanking people for all the donations he was getting, and he made a list, and he was telling them different ways they could donate, you know, and ways they could send money, all kinds of different ways for people who didn't like one way or another, and he was going into it in quite a lot of detail, and he listed all the donors he had in the past, I don't know, short period of time. He had this huge list. I thought, wow. But then I wasn't surprised because I thought, this is the kind of site that people think there is really special, you know, and they're really getting insight. And there's a lot of people who are, like I said, are not white who like that kind of thing. The white ones too, but who would donate to it. And I didn't get the impression that he was making it up. He could be making everything up. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's hard to know if you don't know him personally. So, but now here again, I went there yesterday or so, and there I found, he's got this long thing about how much he needs money. And I want to read some of it because I think it's important to see what people, you know, how people are going about this. And it sounds really phony to me, although he does a good job of sounding sincere. He says, I need to share with you the problems which I and my blog are having and, frankly, to ask for your help. His blog is, as I said, a blog spot, although he was trying to go away from there, and I didn't see that. I wasn't looking on when he was doing that. I guess he tried another. He's gotten a server or something. He's tried something, but it didn't work. And so he's back on his blog spot. But he does want to leave it behind, although I don't know why, because he doesn't say anything, as I pointed out before, in which he would get in any trouble. He's not doing anything dangerous that the blog spot would close him down. And blog spot seems to be perfectly all right with him, but he wants money to pay for a bunch of servers and a bunch of stuff that he says his friends are urging him to do. He's not him. Oh, I'd be happy just to stick with what I've got, but my friends are telling me I need to do this. Okay. So here he's saying right off the bat that he's having problems and he needs your help. I have been trying to avoid this, but several good friends have strongly urged me to do so, and time has proven that they were right. Well, first, I will begin by a short State of the Community mini report so we can all see how far we have gone and where we are now. Well, this brings to mind also that I've noticed in all of his writings that he either reposts things from other places or, you know, speeches that someone has given, including any speech Putin would give or Dugin or Strelkov. Now he's got this huge long post, which is this entire I don't know what it is, something that Strelkov, you know, who was the leader of the rebels in the eastern Ukraine, and now he's in Russia. He wrote something to somebody, I can't recall what, and he posted the whole thing as very, 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 very long. And then when he writes things himself, he uses a whole lot of words. I mean, he goes on and on to say not very much. And I think that's his whole trick. That's the whole trick of a lot of propaganda. Some of it is direct and short and, you know, blaring at you, but his kind is very subtle. And you're supposed to think that he's really letting you in on everything. He's so smart. He's thought this all out. But what he writes is, yeah, he's got a point of view. He's saying something, but he makes it. Sometimes he goes on and on to look like he's writing a whole lot of stuff. So here he says, and I think this is important. Oh, yeah, he says, since 2007, this blog has been a one-man show where one anonymous dude, that's him, shared his thoughts with an abstract and very small but also very nice internet audience. The war in the Ukraine changed all that. From a blog which almost never even mentioned the Ukraine, and he puts in parentheses, I was focused mostly on the Middle East, the Saker blog rapidly became a 99% Ukraine-centered blog. Along with that, an explosion in the number of readers happened. While for years I had maybe a couple of hundred visitors on a good day, this spring it went from hundreds to thousands to tens of thousands to the absolute record of just under 70,000 in one day in August. Thus, it slowly tapered off back to a more reasonable 20,000 to 30,000 per day, depending on the events in the Ukraine. I don't find that hard to believe because everybody's interested in what's being written about Ukraine. So I believe he's telling the truth there. The worse the war, the more readers I got. That's true, too. And then he puts in parentheses, which made me feel like a war profiteer, and a smile, two smiles. So then this, the second huge change, which suddenly happened, was the small community around this blog suddenly massively grew in size. It all began when a wonderful French lady, she goes on about her a little bit, said that she would, wrote to tell me that she thought my blog should be translated into French. I replied, great, but I cannot do it myself. She said she would try to find somebody. A few months later, there are now six, soon to be seven, which will be a Latin American one is almost ready, he says. Independent Saker blogs, all tremendously successful, all with their own large readership and attached YouTube channels. So, yeah, I looked at a couple. He's got a German, he's got a Serbian, and, you know, some others. And so I can't think of them right now. He says, then there are the guest authors, the site reps. I think that should be site reps. Ukraine, one for Ukraine, one for Iraq, one for Nigeria. See the places he's interested in. One for Transcarpathia, Transnistria, and one for Gagauzia, and then Latin America. Two of them come directly from a war zone and thus depend on the author's personal safety. Yeah. So we're getting all this great information from these people, supposedly. And then, you know, he writes two more paragraphs just talking about, I don't know what, that I can't even hardly bring myself to read. And then he finally ends up with, at the very least, we can serve to crash their propaganda about a consensus in their support. Finally, we can be a people-to-people bridge between the people living under the Anglo-Zionist Empire's rule and those living in the truly free world led by Russia. That's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. What's free about the world led by Russia? You know, if you say that the Anglo-Zionist Empire is, you know, ruled by Zionists, okay, but a Russia is Zionist too. So, oh boy, he doesn't seem to, he thinks people don't know that. Then another paragraph, he has to pinch himself to check whether this is just a dream that he's got all these blogs now and all these wonderful people working for him and helping him. And then he says, finally, because of the very high risks of censorship and or legal attack. You see, now, he doesn't have a high risk of censorship or legal attack. He doesn't. Because he's speaking up for the Russian point of view? Absolutely not. That's a big lie right there, trying to lead people astray. He says, I have agreed, because of this, to move this blog to a new server in a safer jurisdiction in Iceland and on a privately owned server. As you know, this important and necessary step has so far been less than a success. More about that further below. So let's turn to my problems now. Well, what I got was that it wasn't a success because he wasn't able to run a website that wasn't Blogspot, you know, that he wasn't able to put together his own website. He didn't, whoever else was with him wasn't, and that's why it didn't work out. But he says, all of his problems now can be summarized in a simple expression, time and money. And then he goes on about the huge growth of his blog and why it takes so much more time, although if he's just, you know, it doesn't, because if he's just writing the same blog post that he always did, and he always did it, and he's got other people transferring what he's got to sites in other countries that they've put up themselves and take care of, I don't know what more he has to do, but he's trying to tell us that he does, that he has to find the right people while producing analyses of the civil war in Ukraine and moderating one to several hundred comments each day. He does get some comments. He'd asked two friends to help him with that task, but one they didn't. I don't know. They just didn't do it. They started and quit. That's the way it goes. As a result of all these developments, my daily workload for this blog has been exponentially going up throughout the spring, summer, and fall. At the same time, however, donations have been going down. So let's talk about these donations. Sigh, deep breath, plunging, he puts in parentheses. Those who have been here long enough know that the entire idea of donations came from readers who literally demanded that I create some kind of donation option. Again, he's again saying, it's not me that wants money. It's my it's readers and friends of mine who care about me who are insisting that I do these things. And then he talks about how he's always been so uncomfortable asking for money and talking for money. Well, everybody says that, and for most people it's true. For most of us it is true. But, you know, he says, he decided to give it a try. And to my most absolute amazement, donations began coming in, and even in amounts sufficient enough to make a difference in my family's budget. So he needs to support his family. In fact, without these donations, we could not have made it through the summer without sinking further into debt. If he didn't need to do this for all these years before, from 2007 on, just because he's busier now, what's really going on is that he's got all these new readers. And so he thinks, you know, well, he needs to get these new readers on board sending in money, because his old readers were sending money. I read this thing. I told you. I saw it there a couple of, at least two or three months ago, and time's usually more time than what I think it is. He's always paid a lot of attention to donations and to telling people all the ways on the side, on his sidebar, on his site, and all the ways they can send donations. So this doesn't ring true either, that they wouldn't have made it through the summer, his family, without sinking further into debt. And he's, full disclosure, he says, we have a house and two old cars, but no savings, no pension, and plenty of credit card debt. I bet they don't have savings, and they don't have pension, and they have plenty of credit card debt. That's the way people like that live. You know, I'll bet that's absolutely true. They have a house and two cars, though. He's got a house. That's more than some people have. I don't know how old this man is. He seems to have children at home, and he's doing all this. And he says, over the past couple of months, however, these donations have been steadily decreasing. Well, why have his donations been decreasing when all these people are interested in what he has to say? I don't know. But he says, frankly, my family and I only pulled it through thanks to one individual from Northern Europe who has been helping month after month, and without whom I could never have maintained this blog. Clearly, many supporters are suffering from donor fatigue or are also maxed out. Well, maybe they've wised up, too, and realized, you know, that you're not really giving them the kind of information they thought it seemed that you were giving when they started out, and they're disappointed in what they're receiving. Or if they have donor fatigue, it shows that that he had a lot of supporters, but he says they're not coming through now. So now he's saying, I have always been reluctant to create categories of readers or to offer some products, services, only to paying subscribers. Here it comes, the subscriber thing. This is still something I don't want to do. Still, I am told by friends that I should consider such an option, of course. What does he know about it? He's so ignorant about such things. In practical terms, we are talking about the possibility of writing a book about Russia. We. Now, who's we? His friends and him. His friends. We are going to write a book about Russia based on some of the articles I have posted here, and or making a podcast. Well, so, you know, they're thinking about new ways they can make money. Right now, I have way too much to do just to keep things running, but I could consider these options in the future, especially if my financial situation continues to deteriorate. At this point in time, however, so he's saying if people start sending money in, he won't have to do up any of these things or take time out to write a book or start having things on subscription. At this point in time, however, I cannot add any further activities or ventures to what I have to do every day, not unless I find a way to squeeze 36 to 48 hours of life into a 24-hour day. Well, you know, a lot of people have the same problem, and I have the same problem, but you only do what you can do. that's all you can do. But he thinks that what he's doing is so important, I guess. He says, if I have to take on these ventures just to make ends meet, I will have to dramatically decrease the time spent on this blog. And this right at this time when the Empire's war against Russia is heating up and the Ukraine is about to explode again. This makes no sense to me. Of course not. By the way, he says, I'm often accused of being a paid Putin agent. Every time I read that, I sigh and think, if only that was true. The reality is that Vladimir Vladimirovich has not contributed a single kopeck to this blog yet, nor has any other Russian government, corporate, or even private entity. You could probably find some that would. A few Russian readers have, but I can count them on the fingers of one hand. So a few Russian readers are contributing money. How much money does he need? That's what I want to know. I think that he needs lots of money. I think he's been getting a lot of money, and when it stops coming in, he goes panics because he doesn't want to do without it. You know, once you get used to having income from your online work, don't believe me, I'm not used to it. I don't have one. But if you were used to having an income from your online work, you would. You know, and it disappeared like the way he's talking about, or goes downhill a little bit. You panic because you're depending on it to pay all your bills. He says, I'm at a loss for words to describe this apparent indifference of people. I can only surmise that this is not without honor, except in your own country, in your own house, phenomenon at work. I mean, he's saying that you know, your own country and your own family doesn't honor you when maybe the whole rest of the whole world does. I don't know what that refers to, but I say here that he is a Russian American. I finally realized, you know, at this point reading this that he definitely had to be a Russian American. So he says, I'm just going to read some highlights here. He says, if you value what you get on this blog, then please help me work for this blog in conditions where I can at least preserve my mental health and focus on my writing rather than on my ballooning debt. Well, you know, he's also said he had to give up working on his PhD or writing his PhD thesis. So he's probably is in a huge debt for education and all kinds of things. But he wants these blog readers to pay for it. And I've never found that to be quite, you know, on the up and up to go in to improve your life in that way and expect to get people who, you know, who happen to like your site to pay for it all. So he says, finally, after some more stuff, the bottom line is this. I need your help. First, if you have not contributed to this blog in the past, please do. Basically saying, if you've been reading this blog and you haven't contributed, please contribute, making people feel like guilty, like they're getting something for nothing. Well, of course, you know, I'll just say here that the people of my readers and listeners who contribute anything financial is so minuscule. But I do appreciate those people very much, and they're just—it's just wonderful that they do because nobody has to, and people who do it when they don't have to are really to be commended, because most people when they don't have to, they don't. He says that right now less than 0.25% of the readers of this blog have sent a donation. Oh, so that's not enough. He says, but that's about par for the course. He says, second, the idea of creating, well, if you've got 20,000 readers a day, or let's just say 20,000 hits, and you get 2% of, well, 1/4 of 1% of those donating to you, you're doing pretty damn good, aren't you? Because if you've got that many people, but he's thinking about if he could get all of those 20,000 people to send something in, man, he'd be on Easy Street, wouldn't he? So he says, second, please let me know what you think of the idea of creating four purchase products as opposed to keeping everything for free. Then he says, what about this idea? Can the community support my work by raising funds for me, not by sending donations, but literally by creating some kind of fundraising mechanism? He's saying that ideas are good, but he needs people who will actually carry them out, have the ideas and then carry them out. Seeking out donors amongst friends. They'll go hit up your friends for it. Organizing some kind of mailing list or dedicated website. Write to Vladimir Vladimirovich and ask for his help. And he says he's just kidding. He says, seriously, if you cannot donate or are maxed out, can you help with your brain and especially your time? And then he says this, fourth, and he says some more stuff, another paragraph, and then he says, fourth point, he has a fourth and fifth here. Fourth, please forgive me all the problems with the new server and the back and forth between the old and new one. See, I didn't see any of that, but I guess that was going on. For the time being, let's stay here on Blog Talk, he means, because that's where he is now. And if suddenly I get shut down by a blogger, then go to any of the other Stacker blogs, which are all safely hosted in Iceland, until the new blog is fixed. Well, you know, he's not going to get shut down by Blogger. I keep repeating that because it's not going to happen. There's people saying a lot more dangerous things on Blogger than he is. He doesn't say anything dangerous. You know, but he's trying to pretend like he's in danger of being shut down. It's a ruse. Either he's stupid or he's lying and using it for money-making purposes. Then another paragraph giving his fifth thing. I don't know. And then he says, right now I have the feeling that I am swimming against a tsunami and I'm losing the strength to do so very fast. Please think about it all, and if you can help in any form, please do. And he says, I will probably not have the time. He says, if you would prefer if you posted your reactions, ideas, suggestions here, but feel free to also to email me if you prefer. Like he's saying, you know, write a comment to this post or email me. He says, I will probably not have the time to respond individually to most or even any of your comments and emails, but I will try as best I can, and I will definitely read every single one with the greatest attention. You know what? Now, there's more lies, because if you want people to know that you've read what they've sent to you, you have to answer them and say enough. You don't have to say a lot, but just say enough to for them to know that you know what they said to you. But he's trying to tell people that he's not going to read them. He doesn't have time, and he's not going to comment on them or anything. But they should believe that he's going to read them with the greatest attention. And that's basically the end of that, and he wants to know what people think of all this. Please help in any way you can, he says. Okay, so then Tuesday, November 13th, 2007. Okay, I went back to his early blog posts, and in 2007, he had one in November 13th. He had one titled "New Directions for My Blog and Key Issues to be Analyzed," RFC. I don't know what RFC stands for, but he said that he's going to switch. He's going to switch his style on his blog. He's going to switch his orientation. He's going from what was mainly, he says, a clearinghouse for information taken elsewhere and interspersed with the occasional, you know, original ideas from himself and or original analysis of his, to a more balanced mix of original analysis and highly relevant articles taken from outside the imperial homeland. Well, the imperial homeland must be America, you know, American stuff. He says, why duplicate the excellent efforts of Counterpunch, Anti-War, Information Clearinghouse, and many others? Okay, that's what he thinks is excellent. So he says, I have identified a number of key areas which, in my opinion, deserve a special scrutiny. Well, now he says he's, you know, focusing in on some things. He says, I will now simply assume that my readers already understand these things about what he calls aggression on Iran, fascism in the USA, neocon wars all over the Middle East, etc. Remember, this is 2007, and that's what was going on. And he says, I will now instead directly focus on the main aspects of the events unfolding. And he's identified a number of key areas where he's going to put his special scrutiny. And, you know, I was just kind of flabbergasted because I figured maybe there'd be three or four or something. No, there's 10 of them. 10 of them. And how does this focus in on main events? Listen to them. They're very, very broad areas. I'm going to read each one. Number one, internal U.S. political developments. Well, that covers a lot. Number two, external U.S. policies. Number three, developments in Europe. Number four, Israel's crucial choice. He's saying that Israel has to choose between persisting in being a Jewish state or a democracy. And then what was that one? Oh, I see, I lost my numbering. One, two, three, four. Now five, the real axis of evil. Six, wars in the Middle East. Well, that covers a big area. Seven, a collapsing U.S. economy. Eight, a clueless American peace movement. Nine, a resurgent Russia under the leadership, he says, of Vladimir Putin and his likely successor, Sergei Ivanov. Russia will regain a lot of its former power. Well, he was wrong about Putin's successor being Sergei Ivanov, that's for sure. And finally, 10, the collapse of the Monroe Doctrine, which is led by Hugo Chavez and Evo Morales in Latin America, which he thinks is going to change everything. But it didn't. It didn't. None of this stuff ever does all the immense changes that we believe it can do at the time. So from 2007 to 9, we see all these things just kind of going by the wayside, and new hot spots coming up, taking their place in everybody's attention. That's about the way it goes. Now, I'm going to check back real quick to my mail. But I don't think this is about today's program. Nope. Some information for me. Okay. So I will go through one more because I thought it was important enough. One more of his older, this is still the Vineyard of the Saker, his a blog post he wrote on April 1st, 2008. And it's titled, How a Medieval Concept of Ethnicity Makes NATO Commit Yet Another Dangerous Blunder. A medieval concept of ethnicity. Oh, that's what got me interested in this. Okay, what is that? He seems to... Okay, well, I'll read it. The first paragraph. NATO was founded Well, it's the first one I have. I think it's, can't be sure it's the first one, but NATO was founded with the unequivocal mandate to protect its member, from any aggressor, i.e. the Soviet Union. Considering that Stalin had just absorbed all of Eastern Europe into his communist empire, the establishment of NATO made sense. For all the bombastic statements about D-Day, the RAF, Patton and Montgomery, Western strategists, knew full well that it was the Soviet Union which had defeated Hitler and that the Western Front was little more than a sideshow to the real thing. Well, I thought that was very interesting. I'm sure there's plenty more like that on his blog. But, you know, this is a direct Moscow's line. This is exactly Moscow's line that's been going on from that time forward, from 45 on, or 44 even, that the Soviet Union defeated Hitler, period. And that what was going on in the West was just a bunch of talk and bombastic statements about D-Day and so on, and but it was just a sideshow to the real war, which was between the Soviet Union and the Germans on the Eastern Front. That shows where he's coming from. I mean, there's nothing I didn't find, and I haven't looked at everything, of course, but I have never found anything that in which he uses any independent thinking. It's mostly just the Moscow line and the, you know, the say the Alexander Dugin line. He'd always agree with him. He always, portrays all of this stuff very positively. So let's see what else I've got here. He says the West embarked on what can only be called a systematic campaign to encircle and threaten Russia, that is, once they formed NATO. But why does the West hate Russia so much, he asks. First, it's of course not the West. What we're talking about here are the Western political establishment, or in other terms, the neocons, which now are firmly in power in most key Western nations. Well, at that time, this is 2008, neocons was the word of the day, and he was using that instead of Jews, instead of American Jews, anyway, neocons. And so he says, and what is a neocon if not a former Trotskyite? And then in parentheses, just need to Google neocon and Trotsky to see for yourself. Of course, the neocons have adapted their ideology to new circumstances, but the core of this ideology and the psychological makeup of its proponents has not changed very much since the time of Trotsky. But then, what is a Trotskyite? Well, here's his answer. Following the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, the term Trotskyist is what he uses, Trotskyist, really only had one possible meaning in the Russian language. It simply meant a Jewish Bolshevik. All right, got that? There are many theories for why these Jewish Trotskyists hated everything Russian or Orthodox with such a passion. Some of them good and many of them nonsense. What matters is that Trotskyists indisputably suffered from a Russophobia of a truly genocidal magnitude, and that this hatred made them kill far, far more people than Hitler could have ever dreamed of exterminating. Don't you just love that line, you see? He is absolutely an anti-Hitlerite, this Saker person, and he recognizes that the Russians killed more people than Hitler, but he makes out that there's just the Jews who did it. Just the Jews who killed all the people. In fact, Adam makes out that the Jews killed every real Russian there was there. But anyway, the Jews did this, and therefore they even killed more than Hitler could have ever dreamed of exterminating, making out that Hitler wanted to exterminate not only all the Jews, but all the Russians and all kinds of Slavic people, too. Hitler was a huge exterminator. And uses that word, the Jewish word, for it. Then he says, Stalin's purge did imprison and kill many Jews, but there were still plenty left in the party apparatus. The point here is not to make ethnic distinctions, see? Not to make ethnic distinctions, at least not at this stage. The point is to realize that when one Bolshevik group replaced another, one of these groups had a very strong ethnic component. Here's how I would characterize the two groups. So he's saying this, that there's two ethnically distinct Bolshevik groups. One was the Trotskyists, and they were primarily intellectuals who truly believed in the ideas of communism. Their aim was to spread communism to the rest of the world. I'm going to skip a little part here. The Russian, he says, the modern reader needs to remember that the Russian Empire was in its nature and structure multi-ethnic. See, he's not denying that. The Russian Empire under the Tsars was multi-ethnic, just as the Byzantine or the Ottoman empires had been. And that at the turn of the 19th century, 97% of all Jews of the Russian Empire spoke Yiddish and not Russian in their homes, trying to show that there are all different kinds of people in Russia. They did that everywhere. I wrote that. The Jews spoke Yiddish everywhere in their homes, even in Germany, everywhere. Everywhere Jews were, they spoke Yiddish in their homes. So that's no big deal. It's not only to Russia. But anyway, then he says there was no such thing as a Russian Jew in 1917. There were Jews and there were Russians. And a baptized Jew was, by the way, considered a Russian. So that's his thinking about the Trotskyists and how he sees multi-ethnic Russia. And then he has the Stalinists, opposed to Trotskyists. They were basically criminal thugs who believed in nothing besides power. And he says, for them, terror was both a means toward the goal of absolute power and an end in itself, a method of ruling over Russia. And Stalin understood that so long as the party could exist as an aggregation of factions and individuals, as it had been originally, his power would not be absolute, and he therefore aimed at transforming the Bolshevik into a party which he would absolutely control. Well, that sounds like what Putin's doing with his party. So what, you know? I mean, he's somewhat doing that with his, Unified Russia Party or whatever, moving in that direction. But let's see what else is important here because I'm running out of time and I'm not going to go over. Here he says, we can observe exactly the same psycho-political divide among the Nazis, by the way. In this case, the ideologues of true believers would be Goebbels, Himmler SS, he calls him, and Hitler. Goebbels, Himmler, and Hitler, and the petty thugs, and also the SS. And the petty thugs would be Röhm, Göring, and the SA. And he says you can find the same types in any revolutionary movement. He puts Göring with petty thugs. What nonsense. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's supposed to be giving a lot of important information to people in with his blog that he wants people to help support him and pay all his household expenses and so on. And yet, what does he give in return? So far, I'm very underwhelmed by this. And the reason I wanted to bring it up was to make people, I just like to expose people that I think are frauds. I do a lot of that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to close for now. This has been kind of a selfish program today for my own satisfaction. I didn't get any people wanting to call in and give their views. So I'm going to say goodbye for today. This has been Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and I will see you on Monday. So long.